Eric Dawson's Talking Politics and Breaking Down the Issues. Coming to you live from Essex County, New Jersey, this is All Things Political.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson, All Things Political. Today is June 28th, and I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Eric Dixon. I want to start by talking about the breaking news out of Istanbul, that there's been a terrorist attack, and numbers are not being confirmed by MSNBC, although they do have some up on their screen. They're saying 28 dead and 60 wounded. However, other reports coming out of Turkey are saying that there are more than 50 dead, and that's 50 dead, and more than 102 people wounded. So my understanding as I'm watching the news, and I'm obviously not in Istanbul, but for those of you who missed the news or who are listening to the show and unable to get in front of a television set, they were suicide bombers, and nobody's claimed responsibility, although intelligence suggests that the three who were suicide bombers were part of a cell of 35 individuals sent to Turkey from ISIS during the month of Ramadan to create terror. And my understanding as I'm watching things unfold is that, and coming from witnesses that are there, you had three bombers. You had one bomber who set off a bomb to distract. And then you had a second bomber who, in a different part of the airport, then set off a bomb to distract. And then the third one went inside of the airport, as I'm understanding it, and set off his bomb. So that's what's going on. And they are saying that this is, right now they're considering this to possibly be worse than the Brussels airport attack in Europe. And, and things are unfolding, as we go. Now, Hillary Rodham Clinton has released a statement. I'm not going to read her statement, but you can find it online. And Donald Trump has yet to release a statement, but what they are, Donald Trump's statement is, as you can imagine, more agitating the fears of Americans and talking about the need to protect ourselves, that this is going to reach our homeland very soon. And and Hillary Rodham Clinton has taken a more stateswoman approach in talking about the fact that we stand with our NATO allies. So that's kind of where we are on this front. If there's additional news that comes in, I will certainly give it. Now, what I'm going to do is take a break. We'll come back from this commercial break from the breaking news. And, and we'll get into state, local, and national politics. We'll be right back.
Everyone likes data, because when you have more data, you have more freedom. Freedom to do whatever. That's why AT&T is offering you 15 gigabytes for $100 plus $15 for each line. Because the more data you have, the more freedom you can enjoy. Freedom to post more memories, download more fun, and share what matters most with who matters most. 15 gigs of data for $100 plus $15 for each line at AT&T. What more could you want? I sure can't think of anything. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come in now and get the all-new LG V10, designed to capture, edit, and share high-quality video.
Pricing is monthly for service on smartphones on AT&T Next. Other pricing options available, overage monthly, and other charges and restrictions apply. See a store for details.
Hi, this is Eric Dawson. This is All Things Political. Again, international news. There's been a terrorist attack in Brussels, at least according to the reports that are coming from overseas, more than 102 wounded and more than 50, that's 50, killed. So I want to talk about local politics first. So, you know, there are several things that are taking place in and around urban Essex County. And what's happening around urban Essex County is this fight for flat funding. And it's more than just a fight to it is a civil rights issue that is flying in the face of the Abbott ruling that said that these underprivileged districts should receive greater, more funds than they're able to provide for their school system so that they are providing an equal education in terms of what is provided in the surrounding suburbs in New Jersey. However, Governor Christie has now decided that, you know, it is best to go to a flat funding model, and essentially is saying that every town for themselves as they try to work this thing out. Well, what it's doing is it's sending several people into a scramble right now. It's sending this league of mayors, of black mayors, into a scramble to try to figure out how they want to confront this. It's also posing some challenges, I would imagine, for Senator Sweeney and some other lawmakers down in Trenton, because one of the big issues really in New Jersey, and we'll talk about the $23 gas tax in a moment, but one of the issues in New Jersey is the increasingly difficulty, if you will, the increased difficulty that residents are having living here, that the cost of living is burdensome, and a large part of that has to do with taxes. And so when you look at a town like West Orange, for instance, West Orange is the highest tax township in Essex County, and is the third highest taxed township in the entire state of New Jersey. And this town, along with paying taxes, property taxes, some of which that money goes to the local schools in West Orange, they're also supplementing the cost of educating children in Newark, in Patterson, in Camden, and in Trenton. And they're seeking tax relief. And so what the governor has said is, here's a way to realize this tax relief, which in some cases could be $5,000-$7,000 for the residents of some of these towns. And so the fear that exists, the real fear, I believe, although there are some who are saying that it will never reach the ballot, calling it implausible, I believe that there is a possibility that it can reach the ballot. And I think that everybody should be fighting to keep it from being a ballot issue in November. However, the caveat here, or the conundrum, if you will, that some of these politicians are going to face is that roughly 72% of these towns will benefit in terms of tax relief if this thing passes. And so what you're asking now, and I think that the governor was very clever in what he did, what he's asking now is that those who disagree with him argue against the best interest of these individuals in these various towns. Now, the argument is that we are a collective and that we need to work collectively in order to solve the education issue in New Jersey. But there is really no collective outside of the contribution that is made by these various towns. And I think that folks are having a hard time continuing to make these contributions when it's clear that they have not worked, and that folks who are a part of the education process in some of these failing towns are really just politicians who are doing the bidding of somebody else, as opposed to doing the work that they need to do to ensure the education of these kids. And one of the examples of that would be, if you were to ask most of them, what plan, what very specific plan do you have? There is no plan. There's not been a very specific plan on how to turn around education in these failing districts. And so, again, I do agree with a lot of the pundits who are saying that there will be issues with these communities all the way down the line. I mean, job loss, school closings, the list goes on and on in terms of how catastrophic it'll be. But, you know, what is the alternative? What's the alternative if you're not putting forth, and if there's no accountability? Because you can talk about, you know, some level of accountability that the district, these failing districts might have to the state. But the question that a taxpayer has to ask is, what accountability does that other town have to me, very specifically to me? You want to reach into my pocket and you want to take money out and you want to fund this, but I don't get a say-so in it. I don't have anybody reporting to me. I don't get to vote to determine who is going to lead the charge in reforming education. You're just asking me to put up my $5,000 or $7,000 to supplement the education. So it is a problem. And I do believe that politicians are going to be punished at the ballot for this as they fight for or against it. And whether this bill makes it on the ballot, I think is it may be a number one issue, but close behind will be those who are outspoken against it, because I can imagine that their opponents, even if the bill doesn't make it on the ballot, their opponents will highlight the fact that these folks were voting or pushing to a vote or a referendum that was not in the interest of 73% of New Jersey residents. Now, the problem with that is most of these residents are residents who vote. The ones who they are seeking to continue to provide this funding for, the majority of them don't vote. You see that they don't vote. And I'm talking about the black and brown communities of Camden, of Trenton, of Newark, of Patterson. When you look historically at the votes, and we'll take away the Obama vote, when you take that vote away, those folks in those communities are not high participants in the voting process in elections in New Jersey. It's just a fact. However, when you're talking about towns like Short Hills and Livingston and Millburn and Summit and Ewing, you know, those towns, Westfield, those voters are very, very aware, especially when the issue is an issue that directly affects them, like the, like this flat funding for schools that says to them, we're going to put $6,000, $7,000, or $8,000 back in your pocket of your own hard-earned money. They're going to come to the polls and they're going to vote. So it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how this thing unfolds. But what I would encourage is that all of the folks on the side of, of funding remaining as it is, that they take very seriously, you know, what it is that's going on. And when you lump onto that, that what you have now is, as of Friday, I'm told, based on the legislature's votes yesterday, as of Friday, there will be an increased gas tax, an increase of $23, which will raise the gas tax in New Jersey from $17 or 17 cents, I'm sorry, to 37 cents or something like that. From 14 cents to 37 cents. So you will be paying 37 cents on the gallon for gasoline and tax in the state of New Jersey. And according to what I looked at, I want to interrupt. This is some more breaking news that I want to bring to the listeners. Turkey now reports 31 dead so far, and they report 147 injured in this airport attack by these three terrorists. Back to the tax. So you're talking 37 cents for the per gallon for tax. Third highest in the country, that tax is. And so now when you couple, and now Chris Christie talked about a reduction in sales tax of 1%, right? So our sales tax was 7% and now it's 6%. So that'll be a savings of some sort. But when you look at the cost of gas tax, right, which has gone up 23 cents, and you look at the possibility that folks are going to have to continue to subsidize schools, those taxes are burdensome. And again, I say that when folks are confronted with tax relief or voting to raise taxes, because trust me, that's how it's going to come out. It's going to come out that, you know, Republicans voted to provide a tax relief and that Democrats voted to maintain or increase taxes. And in terms of the, which is crazy, in terms of the gas tax, it was a Democratic legislature that voted on that. So, you know, there's going to be some very, very interesting things shaping out in New Jersey as, as we get closer and closer to November. And that's going to affect all levels of politics. It's going to affect, I believe, possibly, it's going to certainly affect the school board. It's going to affect the, I don't know that it'll affect the council or any municipal races. But I do think that beyond the municipal races, it will certainly affect the freeholder and assembly races. It will have some congressional and state senate implications because of what's taking place with these taxes. The other thing that I wanted to talk about regarding politics is the gubernatorial race. So Lesniak has now decided to enter into the race. And so you'll have Lesniak, or at least the reports say that they're raising money. Phillips still has yet to declare. Sweeney is talking about it, but he hasn't declared. To the best of my knowledge, the only one that has declared is Phil Murphy. And I was also told that a woman in the 35th district, which I believe is in Bergen or Passaic, has indicated an interest in running. I would say to her that that's probably just a waste of time. Maybe she's trying to get on a statewide stage, but it is a waste of time because if you're in Bergen County, then here's what your problem is going to be as I assess the politics. You probably have zero penetration in southern Jersey, which means that you're going to get almost no votes out of that area because southern Jersey is controlled by George Norcross. In northern Jersey, you're going to have problems, right? Northern Jersey, so not just Bergen County, but Essex County, Bergen County, Passaic County. You're going to have problems because in those areas, you have Joe DiVincenzo, you've got Steve Fulop, who has deep relationships in those areas, and those folks are not going to vote for you. So I don't know where you're going to get the votes from. Outside of the vote, part of the issue is money. And these candidates, they start off, with high hopes of running, but they don't take into account the cost of running. Now, I can tell you to run a mayoral race in Newark is about $4 or $5 million. To run a county executive race in Essex County will be about $12 to $14 million. So if you're now talking about running a gubernatorial race, I've got to imagine, because you're talking about 23 counties or so within the state of New Jersey. So in all of those counties, you're talking about, and I'm going to give you on the next commercial break, the actual number of counties. But when you're talking about all of those counties in the state of New Jersey and the money that's going to be needed, I'm going to imagine it's going to be well over $100 million, right? So I'm actually typing in how many counties in New Jersey so I can give you factual information. So there are 21 counties in New Jersey, not 23. So the 21 counties in New Jersey. And so if you say that it's going to take $12 to $14 million in Essex County, right? And if you just did the simple math and said, you know, or if you round down and say $10 million, and you say $10 million times 21 counties, I don't think that it'll be quite double. I mean, or quite, you know, that mathematics, but that would give you $210 million. I'm going to say that it's going to be north of $100 million to run. And I just don't think this woman has $100 million that she's going to be able to raise, especially when you have heavy hitters like Norcross, who's going to be backing, I believe, either Sweeney or Phil Murphy. And so I want to, you know, continue down this path, and then I'm going to bring it down to municipal races, right? So you've got Phil Murphy, and you've got Sweeney, who we're going to be, Murphy has declared, Sweeney has not yet, but he has all intentions on going. I don't know about Phillip, if Phillip is really going to go, but what I can tell you is this. Phillip has money, but I don't think he has Murphy money. And by that, I mean Phil Murphy started the gun early in this campaign, running an entire year and almost a year and 4 months early, right? So, or 5 months early, and contributing in the form of a loan, $10 million of his own money into the campaign. Now, that's the number that he indicated to the press, but I believe that it is more than $10 million. And he may very well have loaned his campaign $20 to $30 million to run. So he has money. All of the other candidates, in order for them to really go, they have to be able to fundraise. If they can't fundraise, they're not going to go. And so I would suspect that part of Steve Phillip not going yet is that he has not been able to fundraise. So as Murphy continues to build up steam and build up name recognition throughout the state, it's going to make it that much more difficult for Steve Phillip to contest him in his bid for governor. The other thing is, if you understand the background and history of Phil Murphy, and this is what I understand, is that Phil Murphy may be looking and saying, you know, I've got deep relationships with President Obama. That's how I became an ambassador for Germany. And because of those deep relationships, maybe he has, and I would imagine he does, have ties with Hillary Rodham Clinton, who is, as you know, running for president of the United States. So when you look at those relationships, those are very deep relationships, but very, very deep pockets. And those deep relationships, those deep pockets, and possible infrastructure might make it very, very difficult for Steve Phillip to compete against Phil Murphy. And again, you haven't heard me mention this woman who said that she's running out of the 35th district. Nor have you heard me talk much after this about Sweeney and what his plans might be. I really believe that it's going to be it may be a two-man race for a little while, just to save pride. But I'm talking about a two-man race between Phillip and Murphy. But if I were Phillip, I would retreat now, and I would go back to just being the mayor, and I think that he has a little bit of time to declare that he's going to run for that office, because I think that office is in 2017. I think he runs in 2017 along with the governor's race. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how that unfolds. On the other news in terms of politics in the county is that you have Leroy Jones, the Democratic chairman, who is will be his trial starts tomorrow in Jersey City, and he's on trial for punching a 74-year-old blind Army vet in the eye. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk more about that trial.
If you're a business owner and you have safety or loss prevention concerns, contact BBSI today. We provide you with both armed and unarmed guards, as well as other security solutions to keep persons and property safe from harm. BBSI can also investigate and let you know if a significant other is cheating on you. BBSI is the premier industry service provider with active and retired law enforcement trained personnel ready to get you answers. Mention Eric and Osmond, Real Talk Radio, when you call and get a free consultation for services. Call 1-800-493-1859 or visit our website at bbsillc.com. That's bbsillc.com today. BBSI, the detective agency you can trust.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson, All Things Political. The call-in number is 646-668-2232. So, as I was saying before the break, you have the Democratic chairman, Leroy Jones, who will be in municipal court defending himself against allegations made by a 74-year-old, you heard me correctly, blind senior citizen who's also a retired Army vet. Now, the allegations levied against Leroy Jones suggest that Mr. Jones or Chairman Jones came to a polling site during the municipal race in East Orange, and upon coming to the polling site, confronted one Bill Graves, and a screaming match ensued. There's a video that's online. I've posted it on my Facebook page. A video that shows, that seems to show, Leroy Jones, the Democratic chairman, taking a swing and actually connecting with the face of Bill Graves. In fact, if you look closely at the video, it looks as though he may have struck him twice. In any event, Mr. Graves has pressed charges, and so now the case is with municipal court. And again, that trial will start tomorrow. My concern about municipal courts is that municipal courts are very, very political in nature. And for those of you who don't know, the trial was originally set a few weeks back, and upon going to the courthouse, the judge indicated that she had not remembered to clear her calendar to move forward with this case, and so she needed to postpone it. It just so happens that she postponed it until after the elections, and Leroy Jones was reelected to the county chair. So I hope, but I'll be keeping a really close eye, and next week you'll get a report from me. I hope that the judge isn't swayed by the fact that Leroy Jones is the Essex County Democratic chairman. So that is the news that's taking place on that front. Now, the other news that's going around is you have Mayor Baraka, who has started a civilian review board. And the question that I'm asking about the civilian review board, well, so firstly, I know in politics, and we're about 2 years out, so what typically takes place in politics is politicians look to begin to line up bulleted items that they're going to put on a mailer that they will be sending out to you to ask you for their vote, for your vote. And one of the things that I believe the community has been clamoring for quite some time, and in fact, Mayor Baraka, before he was mayor, when he was councilman, and I believe even before he was councilman, was pushing for this, was a civilian review board. The challenge with the civilian review board that was sworn in, though, is that they do not have subpoena power. So the question is, what will the civilian review board be responsible for doing? What authority will it have? Thereby, what credibility will it have? So what I'm asking, in short, is it just a political stunt that will allow for talking points that say, I have created a civilian review board? I don't know the answer to that question, but time will tell how serious this review board is. I question again the seriousness of it simply because it doesn't have attached to it the ability for the for the members of the review board to bring about subpoenas. So that's one thing. The other thing, which has to do with schools, but it also has very, very much to do with politics in Newark. And the question is this going to be something that's going to hurt Mayor Baraka? And I know that we're talking 2 years out from a 2018 race, but it's something to consider. And that is that the Waltons, in an article that was published in the New York Times, have committed to contributing $250 million to charter schools to help boost those initiatives. And one of the things that's listed in here says the initiative will begin with a focus on 17 cities, including New York City, Boston, Camden, New Jersey, but not Newark. And it says because Mayor Baraka has called for a moratorium on charter schools. So the question that I'm asking is a twofold question. One, are the Waltons simply punishing Raz Baraka and thereby punishing children who are in these high-achieving charter schools because they're trying to prove a political point? Or, has Mayor Baraka created this issue which will hang over him during election time? And now, what I'll say is this, charter advocates, and not just charter advocates, but advocates for good functioning schools in the city of Newark have come out in large numbers in the recent election. I remember reading that 3,000 of there were 3,000 newly registered voters, and there was an all-time high of 5,800 voters for the highest vote getter. And now as these organizations continue over the next 2 years to register voters, both for the 2017 and 2018 school board year, will Mayor Baraka face the wrath of these parents and guardians and community people who feel disenfranchised because Mayor Baraka has decided to push and fight for a failing paradigm in the city of Newark? That remains to be seen, but the $250 million is certainly an impressive number that will be coming from the Waltons to help fund, charter school expansion and other charter school efforts. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll continue with all things political.
Most people have something they hold dear to their hearts: family, home, health, and they protect their valuables. Social Security is no different. We value the people we serve and believe the integrity of our programs is important. To protect the people we serve and the services we offer, we use many tools to identify, prevent, and stop fraud. We identify fraud by using tools that predict the chance of fraud happening. These tools help us closely monitor cases and identify fraud sooner rather than later. We also have stiff penalties that discourage people from committing fraud. Social Security has zero tolerance for fraud, and so should you. If you suspect someone is committing Social Security fraud, report it online at http://oig.ssa.gov/report or call the Social Security Fraud Hotline at 1-800-269-0271.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson, All Things Political. So I got an inbox, and a listener asked me to talk a little bit about this idea of a VP pick for Secretary of State Hillary Rodham, or maybe I should now refer to her as the presumptive nominee for the Democrat Party, Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I was also asked to talk about Bernie Sanders a little bit and Bernie Sanders' defiance for, you know, in terms of not endorsing Hillary Rodham Clinton. So let's start with Cory Booker, who is, by all accounts, on a short list of potential VP picks. You know, so firstly, I think that Cory Booker is a political animal. And by that, I mean that he understands politics. He understood politics from the very beginning when he came here to Newark. He did a very good job politically. I'm not talking about how he governed the city of Newark. I'm talking about politically, how he navigated the political landscape, right? He became a councilman. Then he ran for mayor. He lost. He came back. He ran for mayor. He won. He ran for mayor again. He won. And when he left to become to fill Lautenberg's position in the United States Senate, he was at that point at a 73% approval rating. So had he run again, he most certainly would have had a third term as mayor in the city of Newark. But what I do think will be problematic is to have a former U.S. senator from New York and to have a current U.S. senator from New Jersey run. Typically, what you want to do is select a candidate who can help you win states. Now, you know, folks go back and forth on that and say, well, you know, voters don't vote for states. They don't vote for VP picks. They vote for the presidential pick, and the president just wants to have somebody who has chemistry. I disagree with that. I think when Ross Perot ran, and we'll talk about other vice presidents as well, but when Ross Perot ran and he had that naval guy who had taken his hearing aid out, I would say most certainly in that debate it impacted Ross Perot. And there are other presidential or vice presidential candidates who have cost the election, because remember, at the end of the day, the vice presidential pick, should they win, is a heartbeat away from the presidency. And so folks, I think, are more savvy than that, and they consider it. So they look at who the vice presidential pick is. And so I think that it would be problematic for voters to consider two Northeastern candidates, one for president, one for vice president. Now, the second choice is Elizabeth Warren. And I got to tell you that I was very, very disappointed in Elizabeth Warren's speech yesterday. I'm not disappointed that she ripped Donald Trump, but disappointed in how easily she folded into the Clinton camp. And I think that that her doing that did a disservice to her brand, and her credibility was shot. So all of those decades of building that credibility was shot in that one single effort to endorse Hillary Rodham Clinton. So I hope that whatever, you know, whatever deal she may have made, you know, would have, you know, will pay off for her, because I just thought that it was atrocious. And the reason I think it was atrocious, and somebody came onto my thread, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before yesterday, when I said shame on Elizabeth Warren, and they said, well, what is the difference? Bernie Sanders, he's voting for Hillary Clinton. I said, there's a big difference in voting for Hillary Clinton and endorsing Hillary Clinton. Voting for Hillary Clinton simply means that you understand the obligation or the right that you have to vote, and the responsibility is the word I'm looking for, to get out there and vote and cast your vote. And so from a responsible standpoint, Bernie Sanders wants to be accountable as a voter. And so when he looks in the political landscape to see who the options are, he's already made it painfully clear that he is not going to vote for Donald Trump. In fact, he's made it even more clear that he is going to do everything he can to prevent Donald Trump from taking the White House. And so even though there are third-party candidates out there, though a vote for those third-party candidates would ostensibly be a vote for Donald Trump. And so what I believe Bernie Sanders, and yes, he's 74 years old, so he could certainly speak for himself, but I'm going to say that I believe that the reasoning behind him voting for Hillary Rodham Clinton is because he's exercising his right to vote, and he's doing his duty as a citizen of the United States and casting a vote in this upcoming presidential race. That's a far cry from saying I endorse you. Now, I want you to understand what I'm saying. I can say I'm voting for you and I'm holding my nose and voting for you, but I don't endorse you, meaning that I don't believe in the things that you stand for. And so one might ask, well, then why is he voting for her? Again, he's going to cast a vote, and he's going to cast a vote against Donald Trump. So even if you say he believes more of her than he does of Donald Trump, and he still believes that she has these issues that have yet to be resolved that came out during the course of their debates during a fierce contest during the primary, those things haven't been resolved. And that is the difference between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Bernie Sanders has said, we need to sit down at the table. I have millions upon millions of people who have supported me, millions upon millions of people who have voted for me, and millions upon millions of additional people who would have voted for me, and if I'm in the race, will vote for me in the general election, because as independents, they can cast that vote. So what do I tell these millions upon millions upon millions of people who believe that you don't care about income inequality, that you don't care about providing health care for everybody, that you don't care about the $15 minimum wage, that you don't care about free college for everyone, for the people, state college for everyone? For those people, what do I say to them? Because at the end of the day, trust, these people didn't come on board with Bernie Sanders. These millennials came on board with an idea to create a revolution. And that revolution is moving forward with or without Bernie Sanders. So Bernie Sanders, from a political standpoint, it's expedient for him to hold fast, because he will lose all credibility and any leverage that he currently has in the White House. So that's what it's about. And I think that at the end of the day, he has these convictions. So I don't think that he's just blowing smoke up our asses. I think that he really has the conviction, but he also understands that he has the leverage. He has millions upon millions upon millions of people who have voted for him and for Hillary Rodham Clinton and for the supporters, including the ones who come down on my Facebook page and my other social media channels and criticize me for the support that I have for Bernie Sanders and the fact that I won't just throw off the towel and run out and support Hillary Rodham Clinton. They really are tone deaf to what this revolution is really about. We'll take a commercial break, and when we come back, I'll continue to talk about this this revolution.
Most people have something they hold dear to their hearts: family, home, health, and they protect their valuables. Social Security is no different. We value the people we serve and believe the integrity of our programs is important. To protect the people we serve and the services we offer, we use many tools to identify, prevent, and stop fraud. We identify fraud by using tools that predict the chance of fraud happening. These tools help us closely monitor cases and identify fraud sooner rather than later. We also have stiff penalties that discourage people from committing fraud. Social Security has zero tolerance for fraud, and so should you. If you suspect someone is committing Social Security fraud, report it online at http://oig.ssa.gov/report or call the Social Security Fraud Hotline at 1-800-269-0271.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson. This is the Eric Dawson Show. And so we were talking about this revolution. And so the revolution is a real one. And it is about all of those issues. It's about income inequality. It's about unfair wages, right? Or the lack of having living wages. It's about civil rights issues and the mistreatment of African Americans, or the unjust treatment, if you will, of African Americans, which gave rise in Ferguson to Black Lives Matter. It's about health care for everyone. That's the fact that we have folks who die on the streets or who are ill and don't seek preventative health care because they don't have insurance. And so all of those things are real things. And we see them playing out, not just here in our country, but we see this frustration playing out across the world as the wealthy seek to become wealthier, right? Because that's what it really is. On the backs of working people, the wealthy are becoming wealthier, and they're not, I don't want to say sharing the wealth, but if you haven't had raises or salary increases for your staff and your employees, but you have seen record profit numbers, then that's a big problem. It's a huge, huge problem, and it has created the revolution. And so irrespective of what Hillary Rodham Clinton and Elizabeth Warren are doing, and I understand this as well, so that you guys get it. What they've understood is that Hillary Rodham Clinton has an issue generating a crowd, and so they have this checklist of things that they want to go down, right? So she's not terribly charismatic, she can't draw a big crowd, she hasn't been able to identify with white women. She hasn't been able to identify with millennials. She hasn't been able to identify with progressives. She hasn't been able to identify with independents, right? She has this stigma, which has to do with her relationship with Wall Street, relationship with her emails, just general untrustworthiness. So now what they want to do is they want to attach her to a brand that has high favorables when it comes to trustworthiness and all those other things. And they would love to be able to attach her to Bernie Sanders. But what they've done is they've attached her to Hillary Rodham Clinton. And the other thing that they have done, and I'm sure you've noticed it, even if you've noticed it by way of not noticing Bernie Sanders, they have not had Bernie Sanders anywhere on the news. I haven't seen Bernie Sanders in the last couple of days on the news, talked about at all. What they're talking about on and when I say news, let's be clear. I don't refer to, in a serious way, to MSNBC, CNN, C-SPAN, the rest of those, as real news. But they are a tool of the establishment that drives the propaganda. And so the propaganda that's being pushed is that Donald Trump is bad, Hillary Clinton is good, Bernie Sanders is irrelevant, and thank goodness we have Elizabeth Warren. And what I'm saying to you is this, that it is, again, that pitfall that they're going to face because they don't have, have Bernie Sanders in the race. The last thing that I do want to ask with just under 8 minutes to go in this show, is in 2008, when Hillary Rodham Clinton ran against President Obama and she proclaimed that she was the candidate who you wanted to have in the White House when a 3 a.m. call was made. My question is, do we still feel that way? Do we still feel that Hillary Rodham Clinton is the best person to have as the candidate to, as the commander-in-chief when that 3 o'clock call comes? And the reason I ask that, and I know a lot of my Facebook followers, you know, would say that I'm just dogging Hillary Rodham Clinton, but I'm not. I'm trying to make sure that we have the best choice, the absolute best choice, and that when you go out and vote, you're voting for a person based on having real information. So here's Hillary Rodham Clinton, who, when given an opportunity to vote, cast a vote to go into Iraq, saying that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Now, the argument is that she really didn't vote to go into Iraq. She voted to give the president a blank check and trusted that he would make the decision. But there were some people who understood who George Bush was, and I'm talking about George W. Bush, and they understood his temperament. They understood his hawkishness. And based on that, they made the decision that they weren't going to give him a blank check. To me, that's like taking somebody who is a spendaholic, right? They're a shopaholic. And you say, I'm going to give you my credit card. Well, you're not going to do that because you know that they're a shopaholic. And so you knew he was a hawk, and you gave him a blank check to go to war. And then you blame the war on him and not on you taking part in voting for him to have this blank check. So that was one. Benghazi is certainly another one. Now, I'm sure you all have read the reports that have come out, which have said that, an 800-page report which says that though there is no smoking gun, meaning that they don't have an email, and we'll talk about the email server next, from or any kind of correspondence from or to Hillary Rodham Clinton that clearly says that she fell down on the job. The reality is that she was aware, based on her position as the Secretary of State, of the myriad of issues, that were at play in Benghazi. And so Hillary Rodham Clinton, she and her administration, her staff, should have known what those risks were. And for them not to know what they were, when that call came around 3 o'clock or somewhere in that time frame, she didn't answer the call. And so that's something that, I think that folks should be thinking about. Now, on the flip side, do you want Donald Trump answering that phone call? Do you want a guy who is saying that he wants to deport 11 million the Mexicans, that he wants to ban Muslims, in essence he wants to make America great again by turning back the hands of time? Do we trust him to make those calls? We know that during this primary season he's been throwing a tremendous amount of red meat to the base in terms of going to war. And I believe that there were times when he even talked about killing the, not just killing the terrorists. He talked about killing the family members of the terrorists. He talked about waterboarding the family members of the terrorists. Is that the guy that we want creating additional instability around the world as he mouths off about the things that he's going to do? I don't know. I don't know. Do we want a guy who did not understand the sensitivity of where he was as he was talking about his golf course and he was talking about his new resort while standing in Scotland and those folks not voting to separate from the European Union? So as he was lauding the efforts of the Brits for doing it, the land with which he stood, those folks were not in favor of it. And he didn't have the sensibility to understand that. So this is a guy that we're talking about possibly just being a few million votes away from sitting in the Oval Office. And somebody asked me today if it's real, if he has a real shot. And the answer to that is yes. But what we're going to do is we're going to take one last break when we come back, and I'm going to explain to you why he has a shot.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Hey, this is Eric Dawson, All Things Political. Before I explain to you why Donald Trump has a real chance of winning, what I want to do is tell you what's flashing across the news screens right now. Breaking news says on MSNBC that there are 35 dead so far and more than 100 wounded in the Istanbul terrorist attack and the airport there in Turkey. Donald Trump has... He's got a very real chance of winning. He's got a real chance of winning, folks, because if you listen to the hype that's coming out of the media, you'll think that Hillary has a clear victory path. But the truth of the matter is they are, for all intents and purposes, tied right now. There's one poll that's way out there that has Hillary Rodham Clinton 12 points ahead. But I think that that's one of those polls that folks put together and they put out there through these media sources because they want to try to encourage Hillary Clinton people and they want to try to discourage the fundraising efforts and the support of Donald Trump. But the reality is they're in a tie. Hillary Rodham Clinton, along with all of the anti-Trump groups, have spent well over $100 million trying to drive up Trump's negatives. And the best that they've been able to get, and Trump hasn't spent any money yet, the best they've been able to get is possibly a five-point lead over Donald Trump. That's all they've been able to get with over, close to $100 million spent to drive up his negatives over the last few months. Donald Trump, when he comes out, and he begins to blast Hillary Rodham Clinton, he begins to raise money, those numbers are going to shift. That hasn't happened yet. When they start to have the debates, and she's got to answer questions, that are asked by him, that Bernie Sanders did not ask, that's going to create issues, and it's going to drive her numbers down. So all of those things are real. And when you look at the terrorist attacks, that occurred in London. You look at the terrorist attack that just occurred. You look at the one in Brussels. All of those things play in the hands of folks who are fearful of what's going on and believe that Hillary Rodham Clinton won't make the right decision or that Donald Trump won't make the right decision. But all these things that are happening right now, including what happened in the EU, in Europe, rather, with Britain. So all of these things are real things that will have a profound impact on how people ultimately vote. And so don't look at the polls now. We're only in June, where we're ending June now. But as we get closer to, say, August, September, you'll see those poll numbers tighten up a lot, and there'll be a lot of anxiety amongst a lot of folks in terms of how this election is going to go. So stay tuned. I appreciate you all listening, and we'll be back next week to discuss, amongst other things, how our esteemed Democratic Chairman Leroy Jones has fared in his trial on his first day. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Eric Dawson talking politics and breaking down the issues. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. for All Things Political.